if you forgot Yalla V'Yavo on Rosh Chodesh, in Meiriv, usually you don't have to go back. If you forgot by Shachris or by Mincha, then you do have to go back. And the question is why? Why is Meiriv different than Shachris and Mincha? In addition, there's Meiriv on Rosh Chodesh. If you forget Yalla V'Yavo, like we said, you usually don't have to go back. Meiriv on Chol HaMoed, if you forget Yalla V'Yavo, you do have to go back. What's the difference between Rosh Chodesh Meiriv and Chol HaMoed Meiriv? Why should it be particularly that Meiriv and Rosh Chodesh, when they come together, converge, why is it that you don't have to go back? And so we said that the answer has to do with Kiddush HaChodesh. Kiddush HaChodesh was a ceremony that was performed by the Sanhedrin when two witnesses would come and say they saw the new moon, and the Sanhedrin would get together and they would say, Mekudash, Mekudash, this Rosh Chodesh is sanctified. And that would be what gave the special Kiddusha and holiness to the day of Rosh Chodesh. When was Kiddush HaChodesh performed? The Mishnah tells us that Kiddush HaChodesh was only performed by day, which means that in the olden days, before we had the calendar, when we used to rely on witnesses, the nighttime was never Rosh Chodesh. It never had the holiness of Rosh Chodesh because the ceremony of Kiddush HaChodesh was only performed during the daytime. And that explains why we're more lenient for Yalla V'Yavo and Meiriv on Rosh Chodesh than we are for other tfilos or for other occasions, like Chol HaMoed. The reason is because in the olden days, it was never Rosh Chodesh at night. And to commemorate that, we basically say that the nighttime prayer is like a little bit less Rosh Chodesh than the other, you know, daytime prayers. If you forgot Al HaNisim and remember during Sim Shalom, what should you do? Nothing, just keep on going. If you forgot Al HaNisim and remember during V'chol HaChayim, what should you do? So at that point, since it's before you said Hashem's name, you can go back and say Al HaNisim. If you forgot Al HaNisim, when should you say it? If you remembered before you said Hashem's name in the bracha of Hatov Shimcha Ulecha Na'el Lehodos, when should you not say it? If you remembered after you said Hashem's name in that bracha. The next topic that we talked about was Netilas Yadayim. And we said that there is two basic reasons for washing Netilas Yadayim. One reason is Ruach Ra, to get rid of some sort of a bad spirit that rests upon the hands, and the other is for cleanliness. And when we gave some examples of Netilas Yadayim that gets rid of a Ruach Ra, a person who leaves of a cemetery or who goes out of a funeral, those are Netilas Yadayim to get rid of Ruach Ra. A person who goes out of the bathroom, even if their hands are totally clean, would wash their hands to get rid of Ruach Ra. A person who wakes up in the morning, even if they slept in gloves, so their hands are totally clean, they would still wash Netilas Yadayim to get rid of the Ruach Ra. What are some examples of Netilas Yadayim for cleanliness? A person who scratches their scalp, who picks their nose, a person who, you know, touches themselves in a place that's usually covered by clothing, a person who touches their shoes. These are all examples of Netilas Yadayim for cleanliness. In what two ways is Netilas Yadayim for Ruach Ra stricter than Netilas Yadayim for cleanliness? So we pointed out that for Ruach Ra, it's a mitzvah to wash Netilas Yadayim as soon as possible. You don't want to leave the Ruach Ra on your hands for any longer than necessary. And so a person, let's say, who cuts their nails, that you need to do Netilas Yadayim afterwards for Ruach Ra, they should wash Netilas Yadayim right away after they cut their nails. That's in terms of Ruach Ra. For cleanliness, the halacha doesn't mind if a person's hands are dirty, for a protracted period of time, as long as they don't daven or learn Torah out loud or make a bracha while their hands are dirty. But they can keep their hands dirty. They don't need to rush to clean them right away. But Ruach Ra, you're supposed to get off right away. The second way in which we're more strict for Ruach Ra is that the only way to get rid of Ruach Ra is to wash each hand three times with water, from a cup. That is the only way to get rid of Ruach Ra, to do the standard, Netilas Yadayim 1-1-1-1-1-1 with water. In terms of cleanliness, obviously there are other ways to clean one's hands. You can use Purell. You can, just sort of sometimes, just rub the hands together or rub them on a cloth, right, or with a Clorox wipe or something like that, and that suffices to clean the hands. And so in that way as well, Ruach Ra is more strict. There are fewer ways to remove the Ruach Ra. There are more ways that are valid for removing any uncleanness from the hand. However, we pointed out that in some ways, cleanliness is more strict than Ruach Ra, and that is in particular that you're not allowed to daven, make brachos, or learn Torah out loud when your hands are dirty. And so if your hands are dirty, you must clean them before davening, making a bracha, or learning Torah out loud. Whereas Ruach Ra, a person is allowed to daven or learn Torah out loud or make brachos, even if there is a Ruach Ra on his hands. And so a person, who just, cut his nails, if he's in danger of missing the Zman Mincha, yeah, he can run and daven Mincha even before washing the Tilas Yadayim. A person who's at a funeral and he's not sure if he'll be able to catch a minyan when he gets back can daven in the cemetery, even though there's a Ruach Ra on his hands. As long as the hands are clean, you're fine. I mean, this sort of brought us to the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, which is if you scratch your scalp in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, what should you do? Obviously, you can't daven as long as your hands are still oily, right, from the hair oil, right, or have, bits of, skin underneath the fingernails. You need to clean your hands, but you can't walk to the sink in order to wash because you're in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. But again, since we're more lenient, for cleanliness than we are for Ruach Ra, we don't require the 1-1-1-1-1-1 with water. So you clean your hands any way that you can, on a tissue, on a Clorox wipe, by rubbing them together until they're clean, and then you can continue davening Shmoneh Esrei, even though you didn't use water. But again, the hands do need to be clean before you continue davening. And so one who scratches his scalp should pause, don't say anything. Clean your hands by rubbing them on something or rubbing them against one another until they're clean, and only afterwards continue davening Shmoneh Esrei. The next topic that we covered was what direction to face. Obviously, you're always supposed to face Eretz Yisrael. The kasha is that, in New York, Eretz Yisrael is in the southeast, and nobody faces, or people often don't face southeast, they face directly to the east. And the question is, why? So the Lechem Chamudos basically explained that, when it comes to facing Eretz Yisrael, we face, right, either north or south or east or west. We're not going to face, like 360, degrees of the compass, and we're not going to face, the 8 points, right, of a weather vane. It's one of the four major directions. And so since Eretz Yisrael is more to the east of New York than it is to the south, we're going to face east. If you're in the west, you're going to face, sorry, if you're in the east of Eretz Yisrael, you'll face west. And we're not going to pay attention to the fact that it's slightly to the south or slightly to the north, or something along those lines. That's the Lechem Chamudos' explanation. The Mishnah Brura says, no, we really should face directly to Eretz Yisrael. And therefore he says that in New York, we should face not east, but southeast, so that our faces, if we had X-ray vision, we would be able to see Eretz Yisrael on the way that we're facing. If we face due east, he says, we wouldn't see Eretz Yisrael. We'd see countries that are to the north of Eretz Yisrael. So we need to face a little bit to the south, so that if we had X-ray vision, 7-league vision, we would be able to see Eretz Yisrael during our davening. There is another interpretation of the Mishnah Brura. Some people say you should face the direction of the shortest route to Eretz Yisrael. And so we know that airplanes that fly from New York to Eretz Yisrael, they actually fly to the northeast, because of the curvature of the globe, that, if you head north, you'll actually get to Israel faster and with fewer miles than if you head south. And so there are some people who say perhaps that northeast is also a legitimate direction to face, because that is the start of the shortest road, the shortest path to Eretz Yisrael. But most people follow the first interpretation of the Mishnah Brura and face southeast. According to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, When is it allowed to put the Aron Kodesh on a non-Eastern wall in the USA? So Rosh Shlomo Zalman says that if there's not enough, if by putting the Aron Kodesh on the Eastern wall, there won't be enough room in shul for the people, who need to daven there, and therefore for architectural and interior design reasons, one needs to put the Aron Kodesh on a different wall. So then it is permitted to put the Aron Kodesh on a different wall. Obviously, if a person is building a shul, they should, they should purchase a property and hire an architect, and design the building in such a way that, that you're able to maximize space and get the Aron Kodesh on the right wall. But if, they're working on a building that's already been built or a property that's shaped in an irregular, manner, and the only way to do it, is by putting the Aron Kodesh on a different wall, so then Rav Shlomo Zalman says that it's allowed in order to make sure that everybody who needs to can fit, into the shul. If the Aron Kodesh is not on the eastern wall, what direction should we face for Shmoneh Esrei? And so here the Shulchan Aruch is pretty clear. You should still face towards Eretz Yisrael, even if it means turning your shoulder to the Aron Kodesh and not facing the Aron Kodesh. If the Aron Kodesh is in one direction, Eretz Yisrael is in a second direction, and the minyan faces a third direction, what direction should you face? The Mishnah Brura here says that you should face the same direction as the minyan. Even if the minyan is facing the wrong direction, better to face the same direction as a minyan than, better that than to face the right direction. What two reasons does a Be'er Hetiv give for facing the same direction as the minyan? He says, number one, there's a concern of yuhara. It's going to look arrogant, right? It's going to look like you're better than everybody else. You're showing off. You know things that nobody else knows. We generally try to avoid the appearance of arrogance and holier-than-thou attitudes in tefillah. And so in this case, it's better to give up and sacrifice facing the right direction in order not to appear holier-than-thou to the other people who are davening with you. The second reason that the Be'er Hetiv gives is what he calls eiva, which comes from the word oyev, enmity, enemy or enmity. And very often you can end up having disputes. People, who were friends before they walked into shul can be enemies when they walk out if some sort of a dispute arises. And this one says this is the right direction, and that one says that's the right direction, and they disagree. And so in order to avoid making enemies of the people in that shul, just face the same direction as everybody else, even though they are facing the wrong direction. What did the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash symbolize? The menorah symbolized wisdom, light, enlightenment. In general, is symbolic of wisdom. When things are dark, you don't know where to go, you don't know where to turn. When it's light, you can see, you can make decisions in a smarter way. So light, generally symbolizes wisdom. The seven branches of the menorah, for many years, epistemologists split up all of human knowledge into seven categories, with the central one being, knowledge of God and spirituality, and all of the others, the sciences and stuff like that, sort of help the person, appreciate and achieve that type of knowledge. And so the menorah had seven branches. The menorah, in many ways, symbolized wisdom, and the menorah was situated in the south of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, a person, the Shulchan Aruch says, should turn his face southwards during Shmoneh Esrei when he's praying for wisdom. His feet should still face Eretz Yisrael, but his face perhaps should turn a little bit southwards. And that way we're saying with our bodies the same thing that we're saying with our lips. With our lips we say, God, please grant us wisdom. Chaneinu mi'itecha chochma bina v'da'at. Please give us, right, remembering things that we've learned. Please help us understand new things on the basis of what we've learned. Please give us inspiration, and creativity when we need those things. And when we're praying that, we should face south, which is basically praying in body language, the same thing that we're saying with our lips. That's the direction of the menorah, the direction of wisdom. It's a way of asking with our face, what we're asking with our lips as well. The shulchan in the Beis HaMikdash was a table that had 12 loaves of bread. That symbolized parnasa, income, livelihood, basically money that you need to pay your bills, to pay for the groceries. The shulchan was in the north of the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch says that a person should turn his face northwards when he's praying for parnasa. In Barech Aleinu, Barechinu, you should turn your face to the north, and that way, again, your body language reinforces and emphasizes the message of your words when you're praying for Parnasa. If one forgot Aninu on a fast day, you do not have to go back for that. If one forgot Nachim on Tisha B'Av, he would not go back for that. If one forgot Yala V'Yavo on Chol HaMoed, he should go back during Shmona Esrei, if he forgot it in Shmona Esrei. However, if one forgot Yala V'Yavo in Birchas HaMazon on Chol HaMoed, he does not have to go back. The reason being because there is an obligation to say Shmona Esrei on Chol HaMoed, but there is no obligation to have bread and say Birchas HaMazon on Chol HaMoed. And so in order to remind us of that point, there is an obligation to daven on Chol HaMoed, but there's no obligation to have a bread meal. We say that we're more lenient for Birchas HaMazon than we are for forgetting Yala V'Yavo in Shmon Esrei. If someone doesn't know what direction is what should he do? The Shulchan Aruch says, Yechavein libo le'aviv shebashamayim. He should direct his heart to Hashem, to his Father in heaven. You know, the direction of your body is very nice, but, you know, really Hashem wants your heart the most. And so if you can't direct your body, then certainly you should direct your heart. And in some ways, that's even more important. We're spiritual creatures and not physical creatures. And so what we do with our body is sort of, you know, directing the less important part of us towards Hashem. What you do with your mind is directing the more important part of you to Hashem. And so a person who can't direct his body to Hashem certainly should at least, you know, direct his mind towards Hashem. The Gemara gives this idea of la'olam yikanes adam, you know, shnei psachim v'achar kach yispalel. A person should enter two doors and afterwards daven. And this is very, very cryptic passage or quote of the Gemara. What exactly does it mean? And so the Shulchan Aruch gives a couple of possibilities. The first possibility is that it means that you should not daven too close to the door of the shul. If a standard door occupies about 4 tefachim, so then you should go 2 doors, 8 tefachim, away from the doorway of the shul before you daven. The Shulchan Aruch gives 2 explanations for this idea. One of them is that if you daven too close to the door, you're likely to get distracted by stuff that's happening outside the door. The second explanation that the Shulchan Aruch gives is that if you daven too close to the door, you look like you're trying to run out of shul, like davening is a burden, like meeting with Hashem is a burden. And so in order to avoid giving that impression, it's better to daven further in. That sort of makes a statement by where you're standing that davening is something enjoyable that you want to prolong, not that you want to get out of there as fast as possible. The Mishnah Berurah gives 2 nafkaminas between these 2 explanations. He says, number one, what happens if the doorway leads to someplace which is quiet and calm and tranquil? It leads to, you know, a garden or a courtyard where there isn't that much happening. So then there's no concern of concentration, but there still is a concern that it looks like you're trying to run out. What happens? The other nafkamina that he gives is what happens if it's your permanent seat. If there's permanent seats and your permanent seat is right there next to the door, in that case, you might get distracted, but it doesn't look like you're trying to run away because you're just sitting in your permanent seat. Practically, the Shulchan Aruch says that you should be careful for both of these explanations, and therefore the only time that a person should sit next to the door is if the area outside is quiet and calm and it's his permanent seat. But if you're missing one of those 2 conditions, you should not sit next to the door, and obviously shuls should not build permanent seats that are next to the door unless the door leads to some place that is tranquil and calm and quiet. The third explanation that the Shulchan Aruch gives of enter 2 doors and afterwards daven is that a person should not start davening right away when he enters shul, but rather he should wait the amount of time it takes to walk 2 door lengths. In other words, the time that it takes to walk 8 tefachim and only afterwards should he daven. That way, if it's hot outside, he'll have a chance to cool off. If it's cold outside, he'll have a chance to warm up. His glasses can defog, he can catch his breath, and in general, have a little bit more calmness and peace of mind and presence of mind when he starts davening. And so the Shulchan Aruch says you should wait the amount of time it takes to walk two door lengths before you start davening. That is also the halacha. Don't daven as soon as you walk into shul, but rather wait a couple of seconds in order to get the proper peace of mind and presence of mind. The Shulchan Aruch goes on and says that there are six things that we can't hold in our hands during Shmona Esrei. He talks about not holding a sefer, not holding a plate that's full of food, not holding a knife, not holding a roll of money, not holding tefillin, and the like. The Shulchan Aruch says that the reason we can't hold these things is because they take away our concentration. When we're holding tefillin, we're nervous. If they fall down, what's going to happen? We might have to fast. We might have to give a lot of money to tzedakah. So we can't concentrate properly on Shmona Esrei because some of our concentration is devoted to making sure that these things don't fall. The same thing when it comes to a plate. It's going to be embarrassing. You're going to lose your dinner if the plate falls. Right? So just don't hold it during davening. A knife, you might get hurt if it falls down. So all of these things are things that distract us if we hold them during Shmona Esrei. We talked about, there's a machlokas. Some people say that you can't hold anything because no matter what's in your hand, it's going to distract you. Other people say it's only things that are similar to these six things that you can't hold. In other words, things that occupy tremendous amount of attention that you don't just hold them on autopilot, but you're actually focusing actively, consciously focusing on these things. We pointed out that the discussion of whether a person can daven from a phone or not may depend on how you understand these six things. In other words, is a phone something that we consciously focus on when we're if it is then we probably should not hold it during davening. If a phone is something that we don't consciously focus on, we're not nervous while we're holding it, like actively nervous that it's going to fall. So then perhaps, according to the opinion that says only these six things, perhaps you would be allowed to daven from a phone. Again, if the concern is distraction, so then phones have to be on airplane mode because otherwise there's notifications and stuff that can be very distracting. This really depends on how to interpret why it is or what's special about these six things that you can't hold them during davening. When are we allowed to interrupt Shmona Esrei to pick up a sefer that fell? So the Shulchan Aruch says that you need to have two conditions. Number one, you need to be in between brachos, not in the middle of a bracha, but in between two brachas. And it has to be that the sefer on the floor bothers you so much that you can't concentrate properly. So if you find that the sefer is there and you can't concentrate, finish the bracha that you're in. And then when you're between brachas, you can pick the sefer up. When are you not allowed to interrupt? That's if one of the conditions are not met, either if you're in the middle of a bracha or if it's not distracting you. If you're davening by heart and got confused, what should you do? So the Shulchan Aruch says, if you're davening by heart and you got confused, then walk over to a bookcase, take out a siddur, and continue davening right there next to the bookcase from the siddur. The same is true if you're davening from a siddur and then you forgot the halacha. What do I do? B'mashivaruach, or do I say Morid Atal, V'sin Talumata, or what? I forgot Yalaviyavo. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to go back or not. So you're allowed to go to the back of the siddur and read the halachos till you find what to do. If you can't understand the halachos in the back of the siddur, or if the back of the siddur doesn't have the halacha that's specific to your case, you can go someplace where you know that there is svarim, and you can actually walk in the middle of Shmona Esrei in order to get the sefer that you need to look off the shaila. If you can't find the sefer, if it's not in your shul, if there's a rabbi in the shul and he's done with Shmona Esrei, then you can walk and ask him in the middle of Shmona Esrei what the proper thing is to do. It's not considered an interruption because you need to do that in order to continue davening properly. That's not in the Shulchan Aruch, but the Dirshu Mishneh Brura brings that down. According to the Shulchan Aruch, how can one get close to prophecy during tefillah? So the Shulchan Aruch says that the chassidim ba'anshei ma'isa, the great tzaddikim of earlier generations, they used to isolate themselves and think about humbling thoughts until they reached, a level that was close to prophecy, where they sort of, stopped focusing on the needs of their body and only focused on the needs of their soul. And so that was the Shulchan Aruch. He said, isolate oneself. Think about, that you're about to encounter HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a business meeting with Hashem. Get rid of all distracting thoughts, he says, and be left only with pure thoughts. Think about how if you're meeting with a king, right, that's flesh and blood, right, you definitely would script what you're going to say. You're going to make use of every single moment of that meeting, and make sure to say things in a very clear and convincing way. And certainly now that you're meeting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you should follow the script. You should say things without stuttering. This is what they used to do. They would be alone. They would isolate themselves and concentrate on what the words meant and saying the words properly, until they reached this level where they were close to the level of prophecy. What should one do if inappropriate thoughts come into his head during davening? We said that just like it's important to have clean hands when you're davening, it's also important to have a clean mind during davening. If your hands get dirty in the middle of davening, but you're supposed to clean them off, stop davening, clean the hands off, and continue once the hands are clean. If a person's mind is not clean during davening, the same thing is true. They should stop davening, wait for whatever is in their head to leave their head, and only afterwards continue davening. Again, we talked about the Mishnah Berurah gives a couple of etzos and suggestions for how a person can make sure that only appropriate thoughts come into their head during davening. He suggested saying Perek Nun Aleph of Tehillim. Obviously it's important to be careful what one looks at during the day, to only look at appropriate things and fill their head with appropriate things. That definitely helps things out. And there's other etzos as well, to concentrate on the meaning of the words, maybe using the Pathway to Prayer book. That also is very helpful. And there's other etzos and advice that are offered in this Siman of Shulchan Aruch as well. Siman Tzadi Ches. How much personal space is someone who's davening entitled to? They're entitled to 4 amos of personal space. What are 2 reasons a davener gets this personal space? One reason is because if you violate his personal space, that's going to distract him. And so everyone needs to respect his personal space so that he can concentrate. The second reason is because we basically think of davening as a meeting and an encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If 2 people are in the middle of a conversation, it's not appropriate, it's not polite to walk in between the 2 of them. You walk around them. And so when a person is davening and in conversation with Hashem, don't walk between him and the Shekhinah, Kaviyachal. We imagine him as if he's talking to the Shekhinah face to face. Don't walk in between them, walk around them. So don't walk into his 4 amos of personal space. If you finished davening and the person behind you did not, what should you do? You just stay where you are. You don't have to keep your feet together once you finish talking, but you can't take the 3 steps back into that person's personal space because they are still davening, and that's distracting to them, right? Or impolite to interrupt their conversation. If one gets up to modim and there's a cross in front of him, he should not bow down. That's maris ayin, and it looks like he's bowing down to the wrong thing. And that's more or less what to do in that type of situation.